And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. And let's start off by reminding you that it would really help if you had a pencil and paper handy. That way, any web pages, email addresses, contact information, locations, times, dates, whatever it is that comes up, you'll remember later on if you write it down. All right, this is the 26th of February, and let's start off with announcements. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter Habitat Restoration Team will be having a restoration this Saturday, February 28th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The location at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. Spring is starting to show up here and there, even though we're still 3 weeks away from spring. And it's time to get out and start looking at native wildflowers. We will continue our broom bashing efforts, removing invasive non-native French broom in the oak woodland areas of Quail Hollow. We'll be sure to see manzanita and some ceanothus, some red maids, and maybe some showy pink flowering currants. Hope to see you out at the ranch. How to get there? Out of Santa Cruz, take Graham Hill Road. When you come down into Felton, take a right at the light and head on up East Ziani Road. About 2 miles up, turn left on Quail Hollow Road. The park entrance is on the right, about a half a mile up. Meet in the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands in Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Please wear comfortable layered clothing and bring something to drink. You might need a raincoat on Saturday. Also bring lots of enthusiasm. They do work rain or shine, but if things get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and your water. If you want more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 462-4041. Or by email, redwoodrn at pacbell.net. That's R-E-D-W-D-R-N at pacbell.net. Or visit their webpage at www.cruzcnps.org. And also this weekend, Alameda Creek is having a restoration on February 28th, I believe that's Saturday. The Alameda Creek Alliance will host a Creek Work Day on Saturday, February 28th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. to continue our efforts at removing ivy and other invasive plants along Alameda Creek in Niles Canyon. We'll continue clearing ivy from the crowns and bases of trees, and we'll pick up any trash we find along the way. We'll also make time for a short walk along the creek to observe and discuss local ecology. We've had great turnouts recently, including formidable efforts by Irvington and American High School students who have come to learn about and help with our stewardship efforts. Thanks to all those who have helped, we've recently seen some native marah and elderberry sprouting in the areas we've cleared of ivy. They'd like you to meet at the Niles Staging Area parking lot along Old Canyon Road in Canyon Oaks Court. And in the Niles area of Fremont, work clothes are recommended, along with long pants and sturdy closed-toe shoes that can get dirty, sneakers or boots. Once again, you might want to bring a raincoat. A long-sleeve shirt and hat are recommended. Be prepared for cool weather in the morning when we begin. With dew possible on the ground, we'll provide gloves, waste bags, litter grabbers, waters, and a snack. Bring your own reusable water bottle to fill. Heavy rain cancels to RSVP. Send an email to Ralph at alamedacreek.org. That's Ralph at alamedacreek.org. And for further information, go to their webpage, www.alamedacreek.org. Coming up next weekend is Mountain Justice Spring Break 2015. March 7th through the 14th, we're excited to announce that for the fifth year in a row, Renew Collective and SAMS will be hosting Mountain Justice Spring Break from March 7th to the 14th. And we now have a location. It will be taking place at Natural Tunnel State Park near Duffield, Virginia. Once again, that location, Natural Tunnel State Park, and that's in Duffield, Virginia. They say, we strongly recommend you attend the entire week since this allows us facilitators to build a better safe and supportive group environment and allows you to take full advantage of the unique opportunities offered every day. If you really want to come and think you might miss one or some days, please let us know when you register, and you need to go to their webpage at MJSB, that's Mountain Justice Spring Break, Virginia, .wordpress.com. Once again, the location, Natural Tunnel State Park in Duffield, Virginia. We have a spot for group camping, limited lodge accommodations for people who express the need, and the beautiful Cove Ridge Center for daytime use. They are asking a sliding scale fee of $50 to $150, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. It is a fundraiser, and if you can raise the money, they're asking you to bring at least $150. Basic structure of the week is a full day of workshops, field trips, community service projects, speakers, music, time for hiking, and generally enjoying our time together. Food is being provided by the group. Lodging will be provided by you in the form of tents. They'll have a big army tent that they're working on equipping with a wood stove in case some nights get too cold for happy camping. It's probably very cold right there, right now. We do our best to accommodate dietary and dormitory needs. Please let us know when you register. Once again, please go to the webpage mjsbvirginia.wordpress.com. For more information, that is the Mountain Justice Spring Break 2015, March 7th through 14th. Here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. Yellowstone Stevens Creek Buffalo Trap is now empty. Following our media tour of the torture chambers, the buffalo that remained confined in the trap were all shipped to slaughter. The massacre of America's last wild buffalo has eliminated more than 700 of the gentle giants from the world's most important and beloved bison herds. The buffalo's horrific treatment is sanctioned by Montana Code 81-2-120, a Montana law that puts the Montana Department of Livestock in charge of wild bison and led to the creation of the Interagency Bison Management Plan. While Yellowstone National Park is responsible for their own actions, the IBMP would not exist without MCA 81-2-120, and this law must be repealed. Yellowstone's capture and slaughter operations have basically ended treaty hunting, infuriating hunters when the Namiipu, Nornez Pierce, Umatilla, and Shoshone Bannock tribes. Numerous hunt parties drove long distances to come hunt buffalo, only to find that they were all confined in the park's trap and headed for slaughter. Some hunters responded by taking elk rather than going home empty-handed. The Confederate Salish and Kootenai tribes, however, are flush with the bloodshed of buffalo, having killed the most in the hunt, 110 buffalo, while also taking hundreds to slaughter. We hope that the actions carried out by the Park Service and the tribes participating in slaughter have clearly demonstrated that Interagency Bison Management Plan representatives have very little respect for treaty rights. Treaty rights, in fact, have been used by the Montana Department of Livestock and other IBMP agencies to facilitate the destruction of these last wild herds. The Buffalo Field Campaign strongly opposes the hunting of ecologically extinct bison, yet we stand in solidarity with the tribes who not only have the right to hunt, but also the right to healthy, viable, and abundant populations of wild migratory buffalo. The killing of buffalo at the Yellowstone border through slaughter and hunting prevents them from accessing vast tracts of open and unclaimed lands, a violation of treaty rights and the rights of buffalo to roam their homelands. In the Gardner Basin, all but void of wild buffalo, we ventured into the park on Saturday to look for the walking mountains of warm wool and big beating hearts. After such an intense week, this turned out to be exactly what we needed. From the Blacktail Plateau down through the Lamar Valley, we encountered a few hundred buffalo in the valleys, high up on grassy mountains and along the roadway, herds of family groups, solitary bulls, and bachelor bull groups just doing their thing. The mild winter has been good to them, and those we saw looked healthy. They were sparring, playing, running, grazing, and just being buffalo upon the earth. They are the sovereignty of the land and wear this crown with dignity and grace. For all their bulk and power, buffalo move gently over the landscape. This day in celebration of and with buffalo was good medicine for our wounded hearts. We give thanks to the buffalo for sharing time and space with us and for the profound inspiration to stay the course for the difficult times ahead. The Buffalo Field Campaign can receive their mail at P.O. Box 957 in West Yellowstone, Montana. The zip code is 59758. And you can visit their webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you have any questions, you might give them a call. Area code 406-646-0070. If you have any questions, ask for Mike and tell him Dennis sent you. And turning to news, Nepal's most wanted wildlife criminal has been caught in Malaysia. The convicted leader of a rhino poaching network in Nepal, who was on the run and the subject of an Interpol red notice, has been arrested in Malaysia following what the global police force termed close international collaboration. Rajkumar Praja was wanted to serve a 15-year sentence for rhino poaching and trading internationally in rhino horn. Nepali authorities requested that Interpol issue an international wanted persons alert, known as a red notice, for the 31-year-old after he fled Nepal to avoid punishment. In 2013, Nepalese police, with the support of the Nepalese Army and the Department of National Parks and Wildlife Conservation, arrested a network of more than a dozen poachers suspected of killing 19 rhinos in Chitwan National Park. Praja was arrested in that group of suspects, but he managed to escape. Interpol National Center bureaus in Nepal and Malaysia exchanged information that eventually resulted in Praja's arrest by the Royal Malaysian Police in January. Praja was found to be in possession of a fraudulent passport issued under a false name. He has since been returned to Nepal to serve his sentence. What we have achieved with the arrests of Rajkumar Praja is a testament to how law enforcement agencies can utilize Interpol resources to share information and coordinate beyond national boundaries to combat transnational organized crime, said DIGP Hemant Mala Thakuri, director of the Nepal Police Central Investigation Bureau. This arrest sends a strong message to criminals hiding in a foreign country that no matter where they are not safe and will be caught one day, said Thakuri. Praja's name was known to police around the world, and he was a target of Interpol's 2014 Operation Infraterra, the international police agency's first global fugitive operation. It focused on suspects wanted for environmental crimes. Interpol had a list of 139 fugitives wanted by 36 member countries for illegal fishing, wildlife trafficking, illegal trade and disposal of waste, illegal logging and trading in illicit ivory, and more. Praja was not the only high-profile target caught in the Operation Infraterra net and arrested. Also nabbed were Faisal Mohammed Ali, the alleged leader of an ivory smuggling ring, and Ben Samisuki, suspected of illegal ivory trading. Interpol's activities to investigate and disrupt wildlife crime networks operating in Asia come under its Project Predator, which aims to support and enhance the governance and law enforcement capacity for the conservation of Asian big cats. It is primarily funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development, and we thank the Environment News Service for that story. And Coastal Guardian watchmen confront armed trophy hunters to save grizzlies. In this story, my Chalo Pristupa of the Vancouver Observer, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Patrolling up and down British Columbia's coast with binoculars are a group of dedicated First Nations volunteers that boat ride up to armed hunters, often American, with their vessels to dissuade them from killing at-risk grizzlies just for sport. Called the Coastal Guardian Watchmen, they urge unsuspecting trophy hunters to halt their pursuit of grizzlies as insensitive to First Nations culture and against tribal law. Sometimes it gets nasty, said Jason Moody, a patroller from the Noxalk Nation in Bella Coola. Sometimes you get trophy hunters realizing, okay, you guys don't want the hunting around here, we'll go somewhere else. Foreign hunters from places like Virginia and Texas pay thousands of dollars to come to British Columbia to be in one of the few places left where the fourth largest carnivore on the planet can be shot for a trophy head or a bear rug. Many trophy hunters don't like the altercations with the now 16 native patrollers on the coast. It gets tense. Usually just having a presence is enough, said William Hoostie, who chairs the Hiltsiuk First Nation Resource Management Office in Bella Bella and coordinates many of the indigenous watchmen. Oste's biggest worry is intoxicated hunters harming his crews that double as field researchers, quietly collecting grizzly hair DNA in the woods. If there are drunk hunters walking around drinking Jack Daniels, who is to say they won't shoot one of our researchers? That's one of our biggest beefs with the province, he said. The Guardian watchmen do not have the legal powers to board vessels or enforce conservation laws, but they wish they did. Provincial officers, the Coast Guard, and the RCMP are not often seen enough, said Houstie. And many hunters they come across are not carrying provincial licenses. A lot of the people who come up here don't actually have tags. They're poachers, said Houstie. The wildlife manager recalled an infamous incident in 2013 when NHL player Clayton Stoner let some coastal watchmen on board the famous hockey player's boat to photograph the defenseman's recent grizzly kill. The head and claws were removed, and Stoner smiled for the watchman's photo snaps that would soon become national news material. He let himself be a idiot poster child for the trophy hunt, laughed Houstie. Stoner defended his bear kill at the time. I applied for and received a grizzly bear hunting license through a British Columbia limited entry lottery last winter and shot a grizzly bear with my license while hunting with my father, uncle, and a friend in May, the hockey star said in a statement. But since that media spectacle, many watchmen admit they've only been partially successful in slowing the trophy hunt. The Guide Outfitters Association says as long as it is kept legal by the British Columbia government, their members will continue flying in high-paying hunting clients to hunt grizzlies. While we try to accommodate Aboriginal wishes, until they have jurisdiction, the authority around is the Crown, says the association's executive director, Scott Ellis. Our guys are still going to operate their businesses, but First Coast Nations are now threatening legal action to put an end to the business. Colorado's Browns Canyon has been protected as a national monument. President Barack Obama designated a new national monument Thursday at Browns Canyon in Colorado, a popular fly fishing, rafting, and hiking area inhabited by bighorn sheep, peregrine falcons, and golden eagles, said the president. It is right that we think of our national monuments as these amazing vistas and mountains and rivers. In his proclamation designating Browns Canyon National Monument, the president said, in central Colorado's vibrant upper Arkansas River Valley, the rugged granite cliffs, colorful rock outcroppings, and stunning mountain vistas of Browns Canyon form an iconic landscape that attracts visitors from around the world. Browns Canyon harbors a wealth of scientifically significant geological, ecological, riparian, cultural, and historic resources, and is an important area for studies of paleoecology, mineralogy, archaeology, and climate change, Obama proclaimed. Humans have inhabited the canyons, rivers, and backcountry forests for over 10,000 years, a statement based on artifacts dating back more than 10,000 years found in the Browns Canyon area, although most resources have yet to be surveyed or recorded. Of those that have been surveyed, there are 18 archaeological sites identified, including 5 prehistoric sites eligible for the National Register of Historic Places, Obama said in his proclamation. Primarily seasonal camps, these sites include open campsites, culturally modified trees, wikiups, teepee rings, chip stone manufacture and processing sites, and possible ceramic pottery kilns, rock shelter sites that date from the early Archaic period and possible Paleo-Indian period from 8 to 13,000 years before present. These dates make these among the earliest known sites in the region. Glaciers once covered the area's rugged canyons, gulches, and mountains. The movement of these glaciers created unique topographical features in the river valley not found along other major streams in the region. The glaciers also filled the valley with masses of sediment, including the gold, silver, and semi-precious gems that fueled the mining booms of the 1800s. These gems continue to interest professional and amateur geologists. The forest is semi-arid pinyon juniper and mountain mahogany woodlands on the lower slopes, giving way to ponderosa pine, Rocky Mountain bristlecone pine, and Douglas fir at higher elevations. Scattered pockets of aspen, willow, Rocky Mountain juniper, river birch, and narrowleaf cottonwood is found along the Arkansas River and its tributary streams. A stunning array of wildflowers, such as the scarlet gilia and larkspur, bloom here during the spring and summer. Near Ruby Mountain, imperiled plant species such as Fendler's Townsend Daisy, Fendler's Falk's Cloak Fern, Livermore Fiddle Leaf, and the endemic Front Range Alum Root can be found, wrote Obama in his proclamation. Mountain lions, bighorn, sheep, mule, deer, bobcat, red ant, gray fox, American black bear, coyote, American pine marten, kangaroo, rat, elk, and several species of tree and ground squirrels are found in the Browns Camya area, which provides essential habitat for mammals and birds. Raptors such as red-tailed hawks, Swainson's hawks, golden eagles, turkey vultures, and prairie falcons live in the rocky cliffs and prey upon the abundance of small animals that live in this area. The area also provides habitat suitable for peregrine falcons, which have been identified for possible future reintroduction here, as well as potential habitat for the threatened Canada lynx. Other bird species, including the cliff swallow, Canada jay, mourning dove, flicker, blue jay, wild turkey, great horned owl, western screech owl, and saw-whet owl, attract ornithologists and bird enthusiasts. Reptile and amphibian species include the sensitive boreal toad and the northern leopard frog. The Browns Canyon area represents one of the only riparian ecosystems along the Arkansas River that remains relatively undisturbed and contains an intact biotic community. And I thank the Environment News Service for that story. And Occupy Oak Flat refuses to back down in protest against Resolution Copper in this story by Miriam Wasser, found in the Phoenix New Times and on the Earth First Newswire. Leaders of Occupy Oak Flat say they won't give up until the U.S. government repeals the Southeast Arizona Land Exchange. The San Carlos Apache tribe, leading a three-week protest at the Oak Flat campground, vows to remain there until the federal government bends. The controversial exchange gave Australian-British mining company Resolution Copper, a subsidiary of the largest mining company in the world, Rio Tinto, access to a vast underground copper reserve under Oak Flat. The deal trades 2,400 acres of previously federally protected land for 5,300 acres of company property. The land exchange was attached to the 2015 United States National Defense Authorization Act as a midnight rider after it failed to pass as a standalone bill multiple times during the last decade. There was never any transparency in how the bill passed, and now people are outraged, said Winsler Nosey, San Carlos Apache District Councilman and leader of the protest. He calls the land exchange a violation of human rights and religious freedom. People don't seem to realize how this will affect Indians all across the United States, he says. If the government can give away this land, what's to stop them from doing it again in the future? It sets a precedent. Oak Flat, part of the Tonto National Forest, is a well-known rock climbing and camping spot and sacred area for many Native American tribes. The rich body of copper ore sits 1.25 miles below ground, very close to historically significant land, including the site of the Apache Leap. Vernelda Grant, Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the San Carlos Apache, explains that she and other members of her tribe pray, forage for wild edibles, and collect medicinal plants there. This feels like an affront on religious freedom, she told the New Times. Dave Richens of Resolution Copper says his company has tried on many occasions to reach out to the tribes, maintaining that they haven't responded. We really want the benefit of this project to be felt throughout the region, he says. According to the company, Resolution Copper will do a thorough environmental impact statement before official exchange of the title to the land, provide extraordinary protections for the historic Apache Leap, and guarantee safe access to the Oak Flat campground for as long as possible. Doesn't mean forever. Members of the tribe and environmentalists around the world are skeptical of any promised benefits, especially when the ecological risks are so great. Of particular controversy is the mining method Resolution Copper plans to use. It's called block caving and involves digging deep underground and blasting the ore body into pieces from the bottom before removing the copper. Environmentalists across the world oppose the method, and Sandy Barr, executive director of the Grand Canyon chapter of the Sierra Club, says it will result in land subsidence and could damage much of the surrounding ecosystem. While in the past, Resolution Copper has said its plan won't create subsidence, Richens tells News Times there will be an impact to the surface, it will subside, but the extent of that, we're not sure. He explains that they're still doing a lot of geologic studies to understand everything that's there, and it will be at least 10 years before any ore is removed, 5 years for the permit process, and 5 years to build the mine. We're looking for a win-win solution, he said. The company has started drilling for samples, and according to Anna Jeffrey, who lives in Superior and follows the issue closely, it's also pumping out an incredible amount of groundwater. She tells News Times that she's seen how this hot water laden with minerals is pumped and then dumped on the ground, saying it's wasteful and poses a toxic threat to the environment. Copper Resolution says it's testing the water flow in the area. According to a recent press release from the protesters, the Forest Service will work with the Apache people to protect the sacredness of Oak Flat and begin a meaningful dialogue. Or Forest Service's Carrie Templin says only that determining whether land is sacred will be considered during an environmental impact statement. The protest began on February 6th with a 44-mile march from San Carlos to Oak Flat, and occupiers have rotated in and out of the encampment since. In the last 3 weeks, people from all over the country and as far away as Peru and Brazil have visited to express solidarity. Last weekend, more than 400 supporters came, and this past Saturday, there were more than 50 people partaking in prayer sweat lodges, dancing, and speeches. "We're going to stay here and continue to occupy. We're going to continue camping here until they repeal it," Councilman Noyes told a crowd of cheering supporters. "We're going to live, we're going to stay, and they're not going to chase us off." And activists protest and destroy cages in opposition to prairie dog trapping in Colorado, in this story by Ashley Michaels of Fox 31 Denver. Castle Rock, Colorado will soon be home to one of the largest malls in the country, but a local group is trying to push the project back to save the prairie dogs that live there. The Castle Rock Promenade is scheduled to open by the end of 2015 near I-25 and Meadows Parkway. It promises to be one of the biggest shopping complexes in the country. While it's expected to bring major economic boost to the region, several residents have serious concerns. "I live here because of the open spaces, the topography," explains longtime resident Linda Vandestrand. "It is absolutely gorgeous, and they're ruining it." So, "There are thousands of prairie dogs out there, and their lives are just as meaningful as mine is to me," said prairie dog activist Deanna Meyer. "There's a right way to do it. The problem is that the way they need to wait until June because all the females are pregnant right now, and when they do that, they won't come out of their burrows. Alberta Development has hired a pest control company to begin placing traps over the prairie dog holes. It's not clear if they're being used to exterminate or relocate the animals. Attempts to contact the development company were not successful." And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is produced every Thursday evening right here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can listen to a rebroadcast on FRSC 101.3 FM tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. You can also listen in on Monday night at 9:30 on 90.3 KRFP Radio Free Moscow in Idaho. And over the weekend, you can tune in on the net to Free Radio Edmonton, yegradio.wordpress.com. Click on search, and they rebroadcast the show 2 p.m. Saturdays and 10 a.m. Sundays Mountain Time. Or you could go to radioforall.net. There you could listen online or download this or any previous Earth First updates. Your First Update is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz and is a production of Earth First Radio. We want to thank you for listening, and do tune in next Thursday evening for another edition of the Earth First Update.